Hey Cheesebags, just letting you know the audio quality isn't the greatest on this episode because Brogan's laptop died, but we've still got a show, so here it is. 1, 2, 3, clap.
Cool, we all look like we clapped at different times. Hi, and welcome to Hey Buddy, Nice Podcast, over there in Scotland, with technical difficulties, meaning we're doing this without any audio whatsoever. That's Brogan Hastings.
And over there, just hoping that my audio cuts out so he never has to listen to me, it's Wayne Giovinazzi.
I wouldn't go that far. I mean, as it is, your voice already sounds degraded more than usual, which is a kick up for my ego. I feel better because it's like my voice is going to sound perfect. And you know what? Even our special guest, their voice is going to sound perfect as well, because that's right, we've got judgmentalist Jobeth Bowers.
Good morning, or good afternoon, or good evening.
What time of the morning is it
whenever
for you?
This is hitting your ear holes, it's 6 a.m. here.
Oh,
I figured
that's
I'd steal
terrible.
Big sexist line.
Yeah.
And give you the good morning, good afternoon, good evening. Because it's absolutely appropriate, because it's morning here. By the time we get done, it'll be afternoon with Brogan.
And yep.
Mm-hmm. Good
and
evening,
it's
Wayne.
Evening right now. Yeah. All right. So we're in opposites right now. So you're 6 a.m. I'm 6 p.m. So that's easy for me to remember. So I got a message. Was it yesterday? Today? I don't know. Whatever it was. Brogan's just like, yep, Jobeth's going to be here tomorrow. I'm like, cool. Done. I really don't need to take any notes.
I have organized this. You surprise.
Yep.
You have nothing in the matter.
Yeah, cool. Is there a particular reason why? I've just noticed, because I've got my green screen behind me. We could have Jobeth superimposed as just a floating head against my green screen because he's wearing a green shirt.
Yeah.
But you could be the floating head behind me. I just noticed that. But anyway, why have we got a special guest today?
Jobeth reached out to me and said, I've just listened to the podcast and I have thoughts.
Oh, thoughts. Okay, in the whole direction. Well, I'm assuming it's about us not being friends anymore for the success of the show. Is it thoughts on that?
I mean, that's a side thought.
This is what I get for jumping out and inviting myself to join the podcast before listening to the episode to its completion. Because
there you go.
Whoops. I'm probably about two-thirds of the way through that episode right now.
Okay.
But,
so we haven't discussed our hatred for each other and that we're only doing this now because of the children.
I mean, no more than usual. You know, it's always that underlying theme, you know?
Yep. So there was thoughts. There was thoughts. Brogan did say art talk related, so I'm guessing it's somebody has arted or has art ideas.
I have art ideas. You blew my mind a little bit. Well, really not blew my mind, but got the gears turning when talking about the new card game that's coming.
Ah, yes. Yep. Yep.
And when it was first discussed there, all of one episode ago, the idea seems to be right now looking at kind of almost no more depth to it than war, but I think it could be far more substantial than that.
Okay.
Now by me saying this, I'm signing up Brogan for a load of work because it's not just going to be people cards.
I like the sound of this. This sounds great for me.
Let's juice up the artistic energy, right? So I used to play customizable card games when I was what would you say, a wee lad, right?
Oh.
And so I've got all sorts of different formats and different ways. And I'm sure that there's plenty of nerds like me out there that have played many that probably had similar synapses firing. But if you want to really make this thing ICS kind of based, which it sounds like it largely is right now, and my ideas will potentially solve the answers to all of your problems with respect to who do we add in, who do we not add in. Yeah. Like, this doesn't have to be kind of a where do we stop episode 1000 thing. Like, it can continue to grow and expand as long as there's interest and attention to it. But my idea is that the game is called The Obelisk.
Mm-hmm.
And you have different types of cards. Like, obviously, you've started creating character cards, and what you'll create and print in time for Scoopfest is probably only going to be those character cards, which is fine. Because I think what you do, and again, this whole thing is going to end up being the CCG production meeting, but I think what you do is you talk to the boys about making this a Kickstarter, not to make money, because Kickstarter takes so many fees and it's such a pain in the ass
to fund the thing,
but you use it as whether it be a break even to fund the thing or whatnot, but you know, it's going to definitely, if that's done, Kickstarter is a great marketing tool. If it's done right, it's more of a marketing tool than a profit center, because it ends up spreading virally and socially the word about it, but you use it. And again, it'll unbalance the ICS ranks onto the nerd side.
Yeah,
because as it proliferates the Kickstarter world, you're going to pick up a bunch of CCG lovers that are like, "Ooh, what's this one?" So one of the base card type is obviously your characters, and I think you can do over time different editions of those characters. So you could have Uncle RJ, for example, portraying whoever he was and whatever he talked about in ICS episodes.
Yeah.
But then when you do the expansion set that's for two characters in a clown, that's when you get into Baby Francois and then you bring Jimmy and Johnny and any of the guests that they've had in there. So for example, you may end up having, you know, a Myra Loomer card from the original ICS set and from the two characters in a clown set, because Myra's been on both.
Yeah.
One of the other main card types are kind of like mission cards, because there has to be something that you're doing in this game. So both players would build a deck of cards that include missions and characters and probably like equipment or add-ons. Like you might get bonus points if you play the Topo Chico card on one of your characters or something, right? And the mission cards, everybody will have a set of mission cards in there. And then you take turns, like you set the board, so to speak, on the table, where you take turns alternating, one on top of the other, not stacked up, but stacked as an obelisk.
Yeah.
And they almost create like a timeline.
Yeah.
So when you're playing characters, you play them kind of in a pod together, and they move up and down the obelisk. And then you decide, I have enough people, because each mission, and the missions will come from some sort of something in an ICS episode, you know, whether it be them doing the, I didn't pre-think of what some of the missions would be. So I'm kind of spitballing this, but the time that they were at, I don't know whether it was Founders Day or another one-off, but they did the whole like cotton candy thing.
Yes.
Like that could be part of the thing. And so those skills that you have with like the noodling or whatever, each of the missions require certain numbers to be met. So you might need more than one character to add those numbers up to be able to meet that threshold to complete that mission.
Yep. So say, for example, the mission was survive X Madam's bird sanctuary, Heidi Fleiss's place. If you've got a Matt card, you wouldn't be able to do that with just Matt, because clearly he got attacked by the bird. So he would need something, because his skill level would not be high enough.
Right. So the other thing is that you've got the mission cards, which everybody will see face up. And then you're going to have each player secretly, well, not secretly, most of the cards in the deck will be secret, but you'll have Italian air show cards. Those play underneath the missions before time. So you kind of seed those or nest those in so that you think that you've got your grouping of people, you've got the skills that you need to do the Madam mission. And then you pull what's underneath of it. Oh, there's an Italian air show.
Yeah.
So now you've got another challenge that you have to beat before you could beat the regular mission. CCGs often have interrupt cards that allow you to, you know, like stop somebody from playing that card in the moment or whatever. So those could be salt pork cards because, you know, you need help. You got to stop that person from playing that card for whatever reason. Now, again, how deep that salt pork card goes, you know, there could probably be a whole bunch of different ones that do different things. You'd have different, the ham cannon could be a device that adds skills to somebody. Depending on how deep and where you divide the lines, you know, does the Penn and Teller world or PSS have its own subset, or are they kind of part of ICS, you know, because it, you know, it doesn't matter, but it allows you to bring these things out piece by piece.
Yeah.
So you could have a whole Hey Buddy Nice podcast sort of world, which can have its own characters and missions and salt porks and Italian air shows, because Brogan's laptop today, maybe that's a little bit of an Italian air show. But I think that there's, and again, it's kind of the, how far do you want it to go? How much work do you want to do? Because obviously it's a lot to build the whole damn thing out. But it's also the kind of thing where, you know, it ends up being a marketing tool kind of for all the podcasts, because if you end up doing it on a Kickstarter, you've got the base set, you've got a goal for that. And then you have those stretch goals of, hey, we're going to add, you know, pod therapy. Hey, we're going to add, and you can get those things as part of the stretch goals as people who funded at a certain level. Obviously, you know, the Scoops are going to jump on board for something like that. So you'll have, because the key to making a Kickstarter successful is having that baseline of people that are going to get you at or near the initial goal. So, you know, it's funded, you know, it's going to, you know, go, but then it kind of swirls around the ether and everybody can be like, you know, that, because everybody knows that person that plays customizable card games. But yeah, those are thoughts of how to expand that and make it a more than just a war type of game.
Yep.
I love it, because that was my original thought, was that I wanted something, because I wanted it to be originally a bit like Pokemon cards, where it had the bit at the bottom where it had like attacks or moves or stuff like that, but it was getting too complicated for me to think of. I was like, I don't know how I would play this game, whatever it is, but that makes it playable, really.
And you just like, imagine Scoopfest 25, people just kind of in that game room sitting in pairs with these different obelisks laid out, and they're playing cards and running them up and down the obelisk to do their missions. And oh, there's an Italian air show.
So is the now thought that it's a one versus one style playable game?
I think so, but that doesn't mean that you couldn't potentially have multiple people. I think that the one thing that makes doing the games one versus one is it ends up being easier to track whose cards are whose.
That
you get them back at the end. But I would imagine that you could probably, I think that you could probably have multiple people sitting and then alternating and make a circle out of it.
Yeah.
So it ends up being more like your guys's referral scheme.
Yeah. Come full circle. Yeah. Well, I think what might be an idea then is like, don't focus on the art at the moment. Just make up some dummy cards with stats on them. Just write like Matt Donnelly card Paul Mattingly card. The game can be played. And to see where the faults lie.
But just kind of good, because I've already got all the 1000th episode one, so I've already got like essentially a set of cards there with stats. The only one that has a normal card that I'm happy with is Matt. But yeah, so
as opposed to a superhero card, you mean?
Yeah, Matt. Yeah. Matt's the only one who's got a base card.
Yeah.
Rather than a variant. Everybody else had their variants done first.
Yeah. Okay, but yeah, I mean, because it might be worth. Because I've never played any. I mean, like Exploding Kittens kind of thing. That's the depth of card games that I've played, I guess. I never played Pokemon. I played a little bit of Yu-Gi-Oh, but that feels like a bit of a different game again. But then that's the idea, where all the card games are meant to feel different from each other. But maybe some research time is involved. So maybe we'll have to play some card games across Zoom.
You're not hearing me complaining.
Yeah.
No. I have to buy these cards. I have to play this game because research.
Yep. It's a tax deduction.
Yeah. Tax deductible gaming.
Yeah. Hey, the Patreon money was looking pretty healthy. Maybe we can buy some cards.
Oh, don't give me that option to...
Hang on, are you saying I should change the password to the account?
You might need to.
Okay, I will. So is this these ideas that you've been having, Jobeth? So how heavily inspired by other games are they, do you think, or are you like, this is a Jobeth fresh idea?
But no, bits and pieces come from different stuff that I've played.
Okay.
Like that, the idea of that timeline comes from mainly like the Star Trek customizable card game, mm-hmm. which probably came out in the mid 90s.
Yeah.
So it's like, you know, 4 or 5 BB or AB, right? AB, yeah. After Broken.
DB.
During
DB.
Broken.
Yeah. Broken's not dead yet.
The early Broken. Developmental Broken.
Yep. Oh goodness. Just trying to think of all the different Broken acronyms now that they could be.
Yeah.
I had a DB question.
DB before Broken, DB during Broken, PB post Broken.
Yep. There we go. That was the question.
Are you getting tattoos on your face?
To be post-broken.
Far too long. I was like,
yeah,
what?
Me too. I was like, very confused. How many cards do you think would be needed then? If you're talking your base pack with characters, additional items, missions, etc. From your experience, anyway.
I haven't thought it completely through, but I will say that, you know, like card games that I played in my formative years were Magic the Gathering. Mm. And oh God, it sickens me, by the way, to stumble into the rabbit hole that is people selling Magic the Gathering cards from early editions.
Yeah.
That were the only cards I ever had.
Like, yeah.
I got into Magic the Gathering when the, and I'm forgetting this because again, I'm dusting off decades of memories here. I think Revised was the series that I came into.
Yeah.
So it was like Alpha, Beta, Revised, 4th edition, 5th edition. And then I stopped.
Yeah.
So the only cards I ever owned were the ones that people are out. Like you could buy a booster pack, which probably had like 8 or 10 cards in mm-hmm. for like thousands yeah. of dollars right now.
Yeah.
Unopened. So they had on those base sets, and I don't even know because Alpha and Beta were before my time. So like the really expensive cards, like the Black Lotus and stuff like that, that you see out there that if you've mm-hmm. got one that's graded and in the little mm. slab that are like hundreds of thousands of dollars, I'm like, where does money come from that people can buy this shit, right? Yeah. But, and I live quite well and look at that kind of shit and I'm like, where does money come from
yeah.
that people can do this? I want to say that those came, like you would buy them either as, you know, starter decks or booster packs, and the starter decks probably had somewhere between 40, 50, 60 cards in, something like that. Mm-hmm. And then the booster packs would have like 8 or 10. And then I think some of the spin-off series would only be booster packs, and some of them might have been smaller yeah. booster packs. I want to say, and I haven't looked at the rules of any of this stuff in a while, but I want to say that from a, you know, official tournament standpoint, as I put the air quotes out here that nobody can see except for you two, I want to say that they would normally set rules where your deck needs to be at least this many, but no more yeah. than that many. So it yeah. might be like your deck is somewhere between 50 and 100 cards or something like that. Mm. You know, which is pros and cons to both of those. We don't need to really get into the strategy of playing customizable card games,
yeah.
but more cards, more options. A lean and mean deck means you're going to get to the cards that you want quicker.
Yeah.
So I'm, you know, there's strategies on both ends of that, but I've played Magic. I've played Star Trek. I played this. They came out with a Star Wars customizable card game after the success of the Star Trek one, but that game sucked. I mean, like the gameplay for that one was poor to the point where they only produced cards after that for the purpose of putting the different imagery and expanding it. Like, I don't think anybody ever actually played that the way they played some of the other ones. Whereas the Star Trek cards, they just expanded every single series they ever could because people kept buying those. You know, I got out of that by the time I went to undergrad because there just wasn't, I got into different nerd groups there.
Ooh, looks like we got a question in the rafters from fresh haircut person Brogan Hastings.
I do have a fresh haircut. I need to know this so desperately. I can't even describe it.
I know this question already.
Uh-oh.
For the Star Trek cards.
Uh-huh.
Was there a Moriarty card?
I'm pretty sure there was.
It has to have been. Yeah. It has to have been.
I think that they did. So the base set was all based on the Next Generation.
So even better. So definitely. It was in two episodes for that.
But I think that they, they were definitely hologram cards. Not hologram cards the way that you think of as Pokemon, but like there would be, so there were cards that would have a little symbol on that would indicate that they were a hologram.
Uh-huh.
And if you couldn't play them, you could, like in the Star Trek world, there were missions that would happen in orbit, and then there were away missions where you would have to send people down to the planet. And I'm not suggesting any of that depth to this. You could only play the holodeck characters on, the hologram characters on ships that were equipped with a holodeck. You could, now I'm getting into some of the more nuances of this that I forgot. And you would need to have holo emitters as an item to be able to take them to down onto the planet for an away mission. I'm fairly certain there's a Moriarty card in that. And if it's from the original series, I probably have it somewhere in a box, which means it'll be in a care package at one point in time.
I'm so excited for that. Just to know anything that Mori, I love him.
I get it. I get it completely. Yeah, absolutely. It was definitely in a, let's see, Black Border tells me that might have been an expansion set. Yeah, and looks like they're going for about $8 US, so it's not even the bank.
So it's definitely give upable if you've got it then.
Oh yeah, they definitely, okay, that's what I thought. They did an expansion series at some point in time that was called Holodeck Adventures. So he was not, I don't have this card because he was not in the original series. He was in, and I'm not just pulling Holodeck Adventures out of my memory. It's listed obviously in there in the listing. I wish I knew that. The cool thing, you can put little Easter eggs in these. Obviously you can put Easter eggs in everywhere, but I remember there's this one card from the original series that plays off of the, I don't know if you believe in it. Do you call it a conspiracy theory? Because the facts,
it's just a theory. In that case, it's not a conspiracy.
The unfortunate knowledge that Paul McCartney, the original one, is dead, died in an auto accident in 1966. There is a card in the original series where along the border, written backwards, it says Paul is dead. Kind of like you would find on any post 1966 Beatles album cover, because the guy that won the lookalike contest is the guy that we now think of as Paul McCartney.
The Paul McCartney. Yep.
That's another conversation for another episode. But
so with the Holodeck Adventures, so the base game already existed, and then the Holodeck Adventures not just being like additional cards, it was a new adventure, new sort of games to play. Yeah, but
it was the base game, like the Obelisk game would be the game. So if you did a series that was for two characters and a clown, there would be like a little symbol on the card that would let people know that it came from the two characters and a clown symbol. But as far as like what the stats are and what the abilities are, it would all build into the same Obelisk game, because it's not each and every shoot off podcast part of the Obelisk scheme somehow.
Exactly. Yeah.
I'd say you guys don't go 5-6 episodes without referencing something back to ICS.
We on
Big Sexy Digital Nomad don't go more than a handful of episodes without having some reason to relate back to the parent episode.
Yeah.
two characters and a clown have turned it into a little bit of a feud or a war. Mm. You know, but everybody, you know, Jacob's on fucking pod therapy. So how is he not part of the obelisk scheme?
Exactly. I've had a realization in terms of this card game idea. Now,
okay. This doesn't sound like a good revelation.
No. I'm just thinking our strange and privileged life, right?
Yeah.
Uh-huh. We have connections to Ilan Lee, who is from Exploding Kittens.
You Lying Sack guy.
You Lying Sack. All the Exploding Kittens games, like there are so many different games now from that. So there is, and
we're like 2 degrees of separation away from him.
Yes, and he is already a little bit familiar with this podcast format because he has at least in the past been a patron of Penn Sunday School and worked closely with Penn mm-hmm. in making a game.
Yep.
So that's a. It might be.
Well, I think that's how you guys take it from just a Kickstarter to now it can end up on shelves.
Yeah, I'm thinking at least in terms of development, because that's where I believe his talents lie, is in development of games.
Mm-hmm.
So that's
It's worth keeping it in mind.
Yeah.
But keep in mind, I will also say that as I throw out all of these fever dream ideas, I am, this is your thing. I'm just, stirring the fire or whatever.
Yeah, you're doing exactly what I asked for, which is if anybody ideas, please tell me there.
Yeah. And Brogan always knows when I'm listening to the podcast because Brogan starts getting WhatsApp messages from me because I'm one of those people that will send. I'm contemporaneously ooh.
Yeah.
With whatever it is, whether it be something weird that somebody says, I don't like to say that it's, fact checking, but because it doesn't always fall into that category, but just confirmation of this, that, or the other, or whatever. I think I even messaged you when you guys were talking about the ham cannon and about certain things from the OG ham cannon. The tour that Matt and I did.
That's right. Yes.
Last summer. Yeah. Cause the one on Fool Us is version 3, I think. Mm. And the one that he's using now is version 4. And it may be 4 and 5. I don't know.
Yeah.
Cause the one in the photo shoots on his Instagram is very, very much changed.
Well, and you said the method has changed as well.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. The method is, I don't even know if I know what the current method is.
Mm.
I do know for a fact that the method is very different from what I experienced on tour.
Yep.
And what he did in on Fool Us.
Yeah.
There's confetti in the cannon now.
Yeah.
The confetti at the time of the tour was reserved to just fish reveals.
Yeah.
Because it was kind of in there with the fish. But yeah.
So the tour version with you would have been version 1, is that correct?
I'm fairly certain
as far as you're aware.
Yeah.
And you think that version was different to the Fool Us version, the method?
I'm pretty sure it was, yeah.
Okay. All right.
I think Matt even said on a recent episode that it's very different, so he can talk about the previous method.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And people wouldn't even, it's so
different. And the version that I was a part of, having RJ wasn't just putting props on and off the stage.
No, he was integral. He was the Miss Jade Simone of the of the trick.
Like RJ was doing dirty work. So on that tour, when we figured out that we had some issues with the initial issues from the initial canon were really based off of it had a leak. So it would get pumped with whatever the hell made it blast,
mm-hmm.
and it's just air pressure. That's all it was. It's air. I'm trying to get
compressed
all
the air. I think.
Have to put atmosphere into it for it to fire.
Correct. So that would leak, and if it sat for too long, you couldn't prep it. It had to be prepped before the trick, not before the show, because he didn't open
that soon. Yeah,
and so once we figured that out, I ended up basically missing half the show, which was no big deal because I've seen this show so many times. because I would be back and I would listen to something that would be like, okay, hit the pump. And then we figured out, well, if I'm back here hitting the pump, I could do the dirty work too. Yeah. And it just became this gap. Like if you see Matt now in shows, just when he brings out a fish and then just chucks it, that I'm not saying that he didn't do that before, but we use this concept of finding that focal point where things would appear and disappear from.
Yeah.
The can, he would just start chucking all of the fishes. You know, like we had this one show that we did where the venue had like this door, like a normal door right behind it, the stage.
Like on and at the back of the stage or off stage?
In the back of the stage.
Okay.
Yeah, the very back of the stage. Now there was a pipe and drape curtain ahead of the front of it, so you couldn't see it, but there was a split in the middle of it. So we would move things in and out through that curtain.
Oh, yeah.
And so the chair was set up in front of it, and anytime he would produce a fish, he would literally like chuck it. And there was like this hallway that would go back behind there. And that's where I was standing back in that hallway. So that he would just like basically would chuck these fish at me, but he was setting up this whole sort of just, you know, without saying it, this expectation that things just disappear back there.
Yeah.
When I'm done with them, they go back there. So you're not thinking anything of it. The cannon comes up through there. The chair disappears from there.
Yep.
The raincoats come through there.
Yep.
And, you know, somewhere in the mix, dirty work was done.
Yeah.
And everything was as it needed to be. And there were other venues where literally like I was, there was another like door and I was in one part of the venue. And then when I heard, you know, it was just a certain part of the show that when he got to, you know, and I think it was Tonight's Not About Whatever, like the very beginning, that was when I would run off, start the pump, and I had to run back out around, come in through that door, bring the cannon in. So it was wild because to audiences, they didn't know what was going on.
Yeah.
All of a sudden, this huge ask, not as big as the one you see on Fool Us, but it was still like probably, I don't know, a good 5-6 feet.
Yeah.
Two pieces that would screw together. The original cannon was probably somewhere in the 5-foot range.
Not as heavy as the ham cannon looked.
I haven't, you guys will put your hands on the ham cannon before I will, because I'm pretty sure that it's at RJ's house right now.
Cool.
The Fool Us ham cannon.
Yeah.
So you'll probably see that before I do, because I have no...
Dude, I don't know. I mean, I'm listening to the latest Two Characters and the Clown. Are they still recording at RJ's or what? Okay. Yeah. They've just got a new rig.
The clown car or the circus tent or whatever it ends up, you know, the big top is all in a room that's dedicated, because they were doing it just on his kitchen table.
Yeah, yeah. But yeah, they just recently got new microphones, etc. So it was just that upgrade. Okay.
Yeah.
Speaking of magic shows, how about we talk about our very special guest and Jobeth's gig? Because I'm very interested that you have changed, as far as I can tell, changed over more from mentalism to hypnotism? Or is it more of a bit of both still, do you think?
So I try to make it just, for me, performance-wise, hypnosis.
Mm-hmm.
Most of my shows, and sorry, I'm trying to arrange and rearrange so I can plug my computer in here so I don't die on you. I'm good for now, but I might not get to the end of the episode.
We're not going to lose you, damn it. You live.
So I've been doing hypnosis for a year or so now. Mm. And when I learned it, I'm good. Fell in love with it and was kind of like, no turning back. This is what I'm doing now. And that pretty much is the MO, but most of my shows are part of the two-person, two-act show. So if you come to one of my shows, you'll still see mentalism. They're just done by my stage partner, Bernardo. Yep. So he does Act One, which is usually 45 minutes. And I say usually because sometimes we have to do shorter shows. So he cuts a little and I cut a little. Yeah. And then there's an intermission. We reset the stage and I do hypnosis. From time to time, I end up having to do mentalism stuff And I have kind of retooled most of my mentalism routines so that they at least have a hypnosis type theme to them.
Okay.
And that way I can kind of maintain that one character, because a lot of people, a lot of performers that I run into are like, okay, if I'm doing a kid's show, I'm this character.
Yeah.
And if I'm doing an adult show, I'm that character. And I'm like, I've got too much stuff going on. I need one character. That's it. You know, if you're going to have two characters and a clown, they better be three different people.
Yeah.
Like, you know, so yeah, the hypnosis is basically my A1. And for the most part, other than some gigs that I already had booked, at the time that I decided to really lean into hypnosis, I haven't done much mentalism since.
Okay.
Because I haven't needed to.
Yeah. So does it feel like, I mean, yes, all it's performing, it's on stage, but does it feel like you're doing something completely different, or does it just feel like it's just performance?
So the difference is this. When I was doing mentalism, I could guarantee you that almost everything I told you that I was doing on stage was a lie.
Mm, yeah.
When I'm doing hypnosis, everything that I tell you I'm doing on stage is what I'm doing. It's absolutely the truth. If you asked me how I do this and I just did a mentalism show, like all performers of that, of the mystery arts, I'm going to be dodgy with you and give you weird answers and whatever. Whereas if you want to talk to me about hypnosis and how it works, we're just going to do it. You know, I'm not going to sit here and teach you how to do it, but there's not, it's just a different kind of feeling. But for me, like personality wise, I'm not the kind of like me, look at me. Have you guys seen Copperfield's show?
I've seen Copperfield specials. That's about it.
I've seen Darren Brown, if that's any similar.
Copperfield in his show is very like, and then, here, and I then he, here I am, look at me. And he'll do the whole like roll your hands out to kind of trigger you to applaud. And then if you don't, or it's not to the level that he expects, he'll just roll the hands out again. I'm hoping that the folks at home understand what I'm talking about when I say that. The great thing about, like, that's not my personality. That's not my, you know, like I would always get stepped on or yelled at for stepping on applause and things like that. By me doing hypnosis, I no longer have to get yelled at for stepping on applause, but the applause in the show is not for me.
Yeah.
I am garnering applause and I'm encouraging applause and cheering from the audience, but it's not for me.
Yeah.
Because in my show, the volunteers that come up on stage become the stars of the show.
Yes.
And then I shift into a role where I'm just the director. So I, you know, and I think Penn feels a certain way about applause that's not too dissimilar from mine. Where
I think he'd get outed at for like going off stage and going away before the applause was done.
And I've never been that bad, but I'm definitely ready to like move on to the next thing. You know, like, great, thanks. I'm glad you appreciate that. Come on, I've got more. whereas now I can make the applause part of the show, but not have to take it myself, so to speak. You know, I mean, so much so that when I was doing, and even now with the judgmentalist character, my intro is simply all rise. And whoever's saying it, if they're doing it right, waits for everybody to stand up. The court of the mind is now in session. The honorable judgmentalist presiding. And then I enter to a stand, what is effectively a standing ovation.
Yeah.
Because we got people to stand and now they're clapping. And of course, me being where I am, I then make a joke about that.
Yes.
And because that's the only way I want to take applause is if I could make a joke out of it. Like, it's just not like, I'm here to do the thing. Enjoy it. Like that's, do I want energy from the audience? Yes. But do I need you to clap for me? It just feels weird. So now I don't have to feel it. It's the same interaction, but it just doesn't feel weird now. Yeah. So that was really kind of the thing that clicked inside of me to be like, nope, this is what you need to be doing. This is more for you. And it's so much fun. And if I were to say everything show to show, word for word, meaning I'm doing all the routines in the exact same order and I never change the set list, which some people do, and I think that's boring. But even in that context, no two shows would be anywhere near the same.
Yeah.
Because you just get crazy zany people up on stage. Some go much further than others. The reactions are unexpected half the time. Like the last show that I did was a fundraiser show in Atlanta, Georgia. And the one of the closing routines that I do is that I turn everybody into a showgirl and then they're dancing on stage. And one of my most active people throughout the show leading up to that, instead of getting up and dancing, sits back, puts her legs up on the other chairs and starts like mocking like she's smoking a cigarette. And she's like basically like she's the madam back here watching her people out there do the work. And she's just back here smoking. So you never know where that stuff's going to come from and what's going to happen next. I do, you know, a lot of what I'm doing, because I'm still relatively new at it, are somewhat, you know, traditional base stage hypnosis routines.
Like when I snap my fingers, really, you're going to cluck like a chicken kind of thing, or?
I don't do that, but like there's one that like almost any, like most stage hypnosis shows you're going to see will have some place where they turn people into bodybuilders. So they're doing like bodybuilder poses, because what you want this stuff to be, because you could do anything with anybody in hypnosis. And on the clinical side, I mean, you can get people to eat better and stop smoking and curb anxiety and things like that. Well, there's nothing visual about that. So those types of things, while you can have that same impact on the mind, don't make a show. So everything needs to either be audible or visual. So the bodybuilder thing is something that, you know, everybody, it's also recognizable helps. Like, you know, if they're doing something weird and obscure that nobody in the audience really understands what's happening, then, you know, it's either something like, you know, in my job is to obviously pay attention to what's going on, not only for safety, but because I'm basically directing an improv show, is to find those oddities and point them out to the audience just in case they're not seeing it. Because those things happen. And I know there's no such thing as what's quote supposed to happen, but I know what's generally going to happen within, you know, some degree or some range.
Yeah.
But the audience doesn't. So when I see something that is unique or stands out, or is that I've never seen this before, I'd like to point that out. Look at what this guy's doing type of stuff.
Yeah.
So like the bodybuilder pose, if I call back to that, it gives me the ability to get them back into that and be like, you guys aren't just bodybuilders. You are actually, you know, WWE style wrestlers, and you guys all have fighting names. I want you to remember what your over the top fighting name is, and when you remember what it is, raise your hand so I can go up and down the line of my volunteers, and they say wacky ass shit. Like, and what happens is that there seems to be like a compounding effect. So when somebody says something that's silly or a little over the top, it seems like each other person in their mind
rolls on,
goes further. In fact, when I learned this, and this was not, like, I think this was after the fact. This was a subsequent trip to Vegas where I went back to my teacher and mentor show. Mm-hmm. He did the bodybuilder routine. And again, a lot of this stuff, like the routines that you do and don't do, are a feeling. Like you feel that, like I've got like a base set list that I'll draft for the show. Mm-hmm. And then I'll have other stuff that if I get people where I want them to be, because there's a lot of different depths of hypnosis. And if I get people deep enough and they're being really, really expressive and great, I can take things a little further. So there are some things that I punch in and out depending on where volunteers are. Like if you've trolled my YouTube, you've seen at least one video of me doing a routine where I become invisible for one of the people up on stage. I don't do that in every show. I can't do that every show. Because once you fail at something, because you've tried to take something too far with somebody that wasn't at the right depth, it all kind of spirals out of control. So when you have those people and can do those routines, you do them. But otherwise, you kind of have this more safe, more vanilla set list that you stick to. Like, I've had some shows that weren't bad, but they weren't great. And I literally just beelined it through the base set list. And that's all I really felt comfortable doing. And some of this comes from being new. I haven't even been doing this for a full year yet. We're almost there. But it's... You know, I'm now getting into the point where I'm really coming up with some new stuff. And like later this month, I'm doing somebody's wedding, like doing hypnosis during the reception at a wedding. So I'm going to have some new stuff.
That gets... after the ceremony, at least.
Yeah, after the ceremony. Yep. Ceremony, you know, a lot of times, I don't know how it is, you know, in your countries, but here in the US, it's common to have the ceremony at one location.
Yeah.
A lot of times here, it's still a church.
Yeah.
And then everybody buses over or transports themselves to some banquet hall or facility where
that's
the reception
standard.
Is the party. I mean, hell, some of them there's multiple days in between. But so this will be at the reception, and it's cool because it's going to be like a New Orleans Mardi Gras themed wedding. So like I have a routine, which is another, again, a lot of what I'm currently doing. If you see my show in a year, you won't recognize it because I'm at a point comfort wise where I'm starting to retool it and try to make everything mine over time. So, you know, the vast majority of my show is still pretty common baseline hypnosis routines. So anybody that listens to this and then comes see my show within the next 6-8 months, is like, this guy's just doing normal hypnosis stuff. Yes. I'm not saying that I'm doing something earth shattering or world changing because I'm just not at that level yet.
Yeah. You're still fresh.
I'm working on it, but like, there's one where, one of the early routines that I do that really give me the ability of whether I have people where they are. Cause you'll get people up on stage that'll just play along, and there's nothing wrong with that as long as they're not being disruptive. But I really only want the people up there that aren't playing along. So one of the routines that usually is a good litmus test for me as to whether people are actually under or whether they're playing along is that I have them imagine their favorite instrument. You know, they're a world-class musician, and then they start playing, you know, the air version of that instrument. Mm-hmm. And then I have them play a different instrument. Then I have them play both instruments at the same time. That's the first time that I have the opportunity to turn to the audience and be like, what the hell is this even supposed to look like? You know, playing two instruments at the same time. Just imagine, you know, a guitar and drums or whatever. Like, so I get to re-theme that and change the background music because I have background music playing, which is mostly for the audience, but where that gets to be like a New Orleans, you know, jazz band or whatever. And a couple of other things that I'm working on that are going to be, you know, wedding specific. I have to be careful because I'm not going to know much about anybody that volunteers to be up on stage. So sometimes there's some drama.
You could hit on some trauma or something.
I try to keep what I'm doing relatively safe to avoid that.
Yeah.
And if there are abnormal reactions, I've been trained on how to deal with that and to get people awake and out of it and back to normal. Because there are common misconceptions that people think that you can get stuck in hypnosis or whatever. Mm-hmm. Like there's this movie that came out. Probably like Office Space. Yeah, probably came out.
Not the Manchurian Candidate.
No, that's a different thing. but like the main character in that goes and he's getting hypnosis.
Yeah,
and the hypnotherapist dies in the middle of the session. So the premise of much of the rest of the movie is that this guy is kind of in hypnosis and just kind of cruising through life after that. Well, I pose two questions for you. Number one, it's a movie. It's not really a question that I'm posing on this one, but number two, you know, so clearly that shit's fake and to a large degree made up, but like, if you could get to that, like, no stress point where you're just kind of cruising through life, is that altogether bad? Like, yeah. It was the turning point of the movie for that character. So is that something you'd really be afraid of? Well, of course, because you're not in that state. So you're filled with anxiety and stress, and like we all are. So, but no, really, you know, all it kind of is, you know, your conscious mind is where all of that comes from. You're thinking about, you know, is my microphone on? Can you hear me? Does my hair look weird? Am I just a floating head that Wayne has chopped into the green screen behind him now? You know, do people care? Or do I sound weird? Is there an echo? All this other shit's all coming from your conscious mind. So we're going to take your conscious mind. We're going to put him or her on timeout. And we're going to tap into the power center of the brain where, of all things, logic doesn't particularly exist. Up doesn't have to be up, down doesn't have to be down. Volunteers on stage know what they're doing. They just don't give a shit. And, you know, inhibitions are there in the conscious mind. They're not relevant in the subconscious mind. And I've talked to people after shows who were like, I thought I was playing along.
Yeah.
I thought I was going along with everything. And when you got to the point where you told us we were going to be showgirls and we were going to be up dancing, I thought to myself, I don't dance. I don't even know how to play along with that. And then the music started and I was done. And like the girl that I had this conversation with, like, got up, was dancing around, ripped her jacket off, threw it across the stage, was like sliding across on her knees and everything like that, like, was one of the best. And afterwards she's like, dude, I don't even know what happened. And I'm like, well, you know, I did what I said I was gonna do and that's what happened.
Yeah.
And she's like, I just couldn't control myself. I'm like, yeah, and the key for me is to just make sure that I'm not embarrassing anybody, keep everybody safe, not, you know, screw around with people or do weird, creepy shit. Like, that's not me. That's not my world. I don't need that to be, you know, like, you'll probably, other than in a parody form, you'll never see like a show poster of me holding my hands up with strings coming down to my people, because I don't feel like that's what this is. It is what it is.
Off the poster ideas. Hang on.
But I'm not using, you know, like that's not the power dynamic that I want to be a part of on stage. And, you know, the other important thing for me is that, you know, when I was doing magic and mentalism, I was part of a community. The community in the hypnosis world is a lot smaller, and I feel like I'm a stronger part of it already. And I feel like I have a responsibility to the other members of that community when I do a show. So I may not consciously think this every time, but I basically, when I'm designing effects to go into the show and routines for into the show, I keep it in the back of my mind. When I do this show, when I do this routine, am I making it easier for other hypnotists to book at this venue and for this audience, or am I making it more difficult? And if I'm making it easier, then I'm going to just keep pushing forward with it, because you know, you have a bad experience with something, you're going to take some time off of it. You know, there are foods that you don't like that you're not going to eat at all. And you may not like that food because you had it made one time poorly, but it has impacted your perception of that food probably for the rest of your life. If you go see a bad magician, then you probably won't like magic ever again, even though there are some brilliant motherfuckers out there doing some really great shit. But if you saw a bad one first, it may ruin the rest of it for everybody and the rest of your life. So, you know, like, to kind of circle this back to my perception, I feel the same way when I'm putting on these Elkton magic shows, is that I have three audiences every time I put on one of these shows. I've got the obvious people who have purchased tickets and are sitting out here in these seats. That's one audience. Hopefully the performer is going to make them happy and satisfy that audience. And if there are any hiccups, any issues, somebody contacts me saying, hey, something come up, I need a refund, boom, done. There is no question. It's all just, I want to make it as clean and easy of an experience so that their interaction with Elfden Magic is positive. Mm-hmm. It's important for me to fill those seats so that my performer, my second audience, has a good experience. You know, one of the things that when I was booking Christopher Carter, that as we were chatting, mentioned was like, oh yeah, I'm good friends with Dittleman. I'll make sure I ask him, you know, anything weird that I need to know.
Yeah.
Well, if Dittleman before him had a poor experience, Christopher Carter may have had something come up.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden I lose a performer. So that's my second audience, but then also the venue, you know, I want to make sure that everybody is respectful. Anything that I can do to clean things up if something goes awry or whatever, because I want to keep everything going. So, you know, it's super important to make sure that you kind of know what's going on around you and don't just, you know, beeline it with what you're doing. So,
So with something that's you've sort of triggered a memory in my brain about talking about
does that,
with the girl who when it was like time to be a showgirl, she's like, I can't even dance, blah blah blah. There was I was at the Perth Royal Show, the Perth Royal Agricultural Show one year, and there was a hypnotist performing. And they had one guy left on stage at the end because they were the most entertaining and it was the last bit. And the hypnotist said, you're going to come out and you are Mick Jagger. And he came out, did the whole strut and everything that everyone is now familiar with. At the time, I couldn't tell you what Mick Jagger looked like, let alone how he moved. And all I could think was, if it was me, I'd be standing there on stage saying, who the fuck is Mick Jagger? What would that be a possibility? Or do you think something would come out?
I think that, I mean, so people aren't just absorbing information from the ether during your hypnosis show. However, you have knowledge that you might not be aware that you have. You have observed things in the world that you may not consciously recognize, but we're not dealing with the conscious mind. So first of all, there's a baseline understanding of some things that might get triggered. But additionally, you know, there's one of the more difficult routines that falls into that. Sometimes I do it, sometimes I don't do it, is I will have one of my volunteers will be replaced, quote unquote.
Yeah.
With a Martian, somebody that's here that looks exactly like the person that was here, but they only speak the Martian language. Everything that comes out of their mouth will be the boops and bops and clicks and pops of the Martian language. So in that suggestion, I am telling them what to say and what they should sound like by saying everything that you will say will be the boops and bops and clicks and pops. If I don't say that, they may just sit there and mumble and be weird. But if I guide them on what to say. So, and again, you're talking about something that happened years ago. So you may not even remember, because there are things that if you rewatch even just a magic show, they said it that way. Now it makes more sense that the person did this. So it's likely that the hypnotist gave some cue to this person verbally that guided them down the how they're supposed to move path in a very subtle way that wasn't necessarily picked up, because you can teach somebody that on the spot, certain things. Now, you know, if it's really good, that person had some prior knowledge.
Oh, yeah, no, this person definitely knew Mick Jagger and the Stones. But yeah, if it was me and he probably didn't realize I knew what he was talking about, he might drop some keywords like, you're going to strut out here like Mick Jagger or something like that, potentially.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Because I've done that Martian routine where I forgot to guide them with the boops and bops, clicks and pops, or whatever you want it to be. And it was just like mush mouth mumbling, like, you know, gibberish. Which is fine. You're getting somebody to mumble and gibberish, but it's not as powerful as them, you know, meeps or
yeah.
And then you have somebody else on stage to kind of take that routine further, who is the interpreter. They can translate.
Oh, okay. Yep.
So the key person, is that translator, because that person gets the ability to say whatever they feel like the other person said, and you take a lot of heat off of them because I'm not saying it, I'm just translating it.
So you did say before that if something can go wrong, it might start to unravel things to a degree. Has it ever gotten that bad where you haven't been able to necessarily recover a bit and then move on? Or what do you have a multiple outs basically of what to do if something does start to go astray?
I mean, nobody, it's kind of like with a lot of performance stuff, a lot of the routines that I do have multiple phases to them. And I'll just bail and not do the later phases.
If I
get something that's just not sticking the way that it is. I haven't had to have this happen, but like an example of the multiple phases is I have a point in the show where this is relatively early on, but I have my volunteers up on stage, grab an oar and they're rowing a boat. And there's music that plays in the background to that. And then I get them to drop anchor. And the next phase of it is that they, you know, they're baiting the hook and they're reeling out, and then they go fishing and then they start reeling in a fish. The third phase of that is that they're no longer struggling to catch that fish. They are the fish. They've got the hook in their mouth and they're struggling to get out of it. So if I felt like that, you know, that's an example of like, if I don't have people where I need them to be, number one, if I'm at that point in my show and I don't have people where I need them to be, I'm in trouble because I do that relatively early, and getting people to row a boat is not, that's not even going to tell, that's not one that's going to tell me if people are, you know, playing along.
Yes.
Because I can't tell from that. There are certain things that I do in the show that just, I don't want to call them provers, but they really, like, there are definitely people that stay up on stage that I sometimes have questions about. Are they there? Are they not there? And when I go back and rewatch some of the video, I realized that the, you know, people were a lot deeper than they were. Like, I had a guy on stage in one of my first shows that I thought was just playing along. And then when I rewatched the video, I realized that he was wearing flip-flops, lost one of them in one of the early routines, and never paid it any mind for the rest of the show. He was one sandal on, one sandal off. And I'm like, oh, yeah, you're not doing that if you're playing along.
No.
You're finding that shoe at some point in time, and you're putting it back on. But again, when you're in hypnosis, you know what you're doing. You just don't care. And losing a shoe, you just don't care. It doesn't matter. It is from the volunteer's perspective. It literally the 45 or so minutes that they're there on stage with me, they come out of that feeling like they just took an 8-hour power nap. And it is energizing. It is refreshing. It is, you know, I've never had anybody come up to me and be like, that was a horrible experience. Haven't had that happen. I've had some people that have come up to me and been like, that was way too real for me, or like super real. Like I do this routine where they're seeing movies on the back of their eyelids, and it starts off with funny movies, and then it gets into a scary movie, and then they're acting in the movie, and, you know, which kind of takes away some of the horror of it, because now you're just acting. There's something that in that cue that tells people that this isn't real. But you're auditioning to be the scream track. So then I get them all to scream and everything like that. I had one of my volunteers come up to me afterwards, and she's like, I was literally being chased. In fact, I saw my grandfather's shotgun. And if you saw me do this, I was reaching back to grab that shotgun, and I was going to take out whatever was chasing me. And they didn't see what was chasing them, because I don't tell them that something's chasing them or anything like that. This is just where her mind took her. You know, being in the scary movie, that perception's different to everybody, I would imagine. But, you know, the same show, they're some of my favorite testimonial videos on the website, because it was a show that was at the end of October. So we were at a brewery that was also doing like a costume contest.
Yeah.
So almost everybody I had up on stage was dressed up in costume. It's great. So yeah, it's a lot of fun. And yeah, you know, I was in Atlanta, Georgia last week, and I just booked 5 shows in Rochester, New York for September as part of one of their fringe festivals. And you know, so it's good stuff. It's fun. Now it's gotten to the point where the biggest challenge of it is filling the room and making sure that there's a lot of people there to enjoy it.
Yep. Have you got dates and stuff available we can reference at the end of the show?
Slot in
or something like that, or we just give the website.
Everything's always going to be on judgmentalist.com.
Yep.
And that, any show that I'm a part of is going to be on judgmentalist.com.
Okay, cool.
If you go to Between Two Minds, between the number 2 and then minds.com, that's the baseline for that 2-act show.
Yep.
Any of my shows are also going to show up on there. They're just going to be designated. Like there's asterisks on there. If it's a single asterisk, it's just my show. If it's 2 asterisks, then it's Bernardo doing mentalism.
Yeah.
And if it doesn't have asterisks, then it's the Between Two Minds show.
Gotcha.
Because our show is almost perfect for fringe festivals.
Mm.
From the context and the content, it is perfect for fringe festivals. The length of the show is a problem because most of them try to cap you at 60 minutes. So what we've had to do is split the shows. So our main show is called Between Two Minds. And then like the subtitle of it is Enter the Impossible.
Yeah.
Yep.
So if we don't have the time limitation, we'll submit Between Two Minds. If we do have the time limitation, then we apply 2 shows.
Yeah.
Enter the Impossible is the tentative title for his solo mentalism show. The Court of the Mind is the title for my solo hypnosis show. Now, these 2 shows aren't particularly different than what they look like in the Between Two Minds format. Like we'll stretch them each to 60 minutes because we only do about 45 in the Between Two Minds show. But I've done solo shows, just not ticketed solo shows.
Mm.
So far until we get to Rochester will be my first ticketed solo shows. I've done holiday parties. This wedding is just me doing hypnosis. So all that stuff's there, Between Two Minds or judgmentalist.com.
Easy. All right. So another show that's going to get added then. Scootfest 2025 or 26. The Court of the Mind. Who do you want to see up on stage for you to hypnotize at Scootfest, the next Scootfest?
So the cool thing about it, I'm actually so glad that you asked that, because there's a common, like, some people are scared. They don't want to be hypnotized. Mm. They don't want to be part of it. So I get super happy when I get asked questions that allow me to answer the way that I'm answering. When I have volunteers on stage, they're exactly that. I never point anybody out and say, you come up here. There, I explain everything that's going to happen. I give some demos of kind of ways that I can show you that your subconscious mind is powerful without hypnotizing you. I talk about the types of people I don't want up on stage, which is mostly like a health and safety thing. And then there's music that cues, and there's however many chairs that are up there. If you want a chair, come get it, because they're going to go fast.
Yep.
And they usually do. So I don't pick people. But what I envisioned, and before the Egypt thing, when I realized I couldn't be at Scoopfest 24, what I really want to do is I want to team up with Matt and Paul, where I get everybody under and I prep them ahead of time for how the suggestions need to be framed.
Yeah.
And then they direct an improv show.
Oh. Ooh. So you're as in like they would be...
they are the ones that are telling everybody.
They're not under, but would they be taking part as well, do you think?
They'd basically, I would pass the baton to them. I would get people under and into a state where they were suggestive.
Yep.
And then Matt and Paul would deliver most of the suggestions from there on out.
Mm. Do you think
improv shows have been done. I mean, like you were saying, it is basically improv anyway, but has it been heralded as an improv show? You could be breaking new ground here.
There's a concept show. I wouldn't be breaking new ground only because there's a concept show called Hip Prov.
Oh, okay.
That is, if you look at any of the advertisements for it, Colin Mochrie from Whose Line
yes.
Is It?
Yep.
Is supposed to be part of this.
Mm.
But apparently when they brought it to Vegas, and it may already be dead now, I don't even know. I haven't looked at it. But they got a bunch of shit because Colin was never there.
Yeah.
They just had other improvisers that were directing the show. I never saw the show because I was never there while it was happening.
Yep.
I had time to be there because I think it launched the week after I was there to learn hypnosis.
Yeah.
And then the other time, I mean, normally, as you guys know, my schedule's pretty stacked. I'm not going. It's been a long time since I've gone to Las Vegas for pure recreation.
Yeah.
The closest thing that I've gone to Las Vegas for pure recreation was the time that I went out because you guys were going to be there.
Yep.
And then I still managed to stack my schedule full of shit. So I'm generally going to Las Vegas with purpose, which gives me a pretty full schedule during normal times.
Yeah.
You know, I normally if I'm gambling or drinking or whatever, it'll be late at night when there aren't other things going on. But one of the other things that I saw from one of the early reviews is that the induction, the part where the hypnotist is getting people under, took close to 30 minutes.
Oh, wow.
Wow.
And I'm like, that's a little much. Like,
yeah,
I am done with my induction 15 minutes into my show, and half of that time was kind of the intro.
Yeah.
And then, you know, about 6-7 minutes is how long my induction actually is. And the intro is important. You need people to know what they're experiencing and what they're not experiencing.
Yeah.
So, you know, I only need 15 minutes to really start the show.
Mm-hmm.
And that's me taking the stage and on.
Yeah.
So the only drawback is that I don't think that there's anybody that would go up on stage at Scoop Fest that isn't interested in playing along. So being able to identify and again, it's just, they're not necessary. That's the whole thing.
Yep.
Like, it's not that they're bad. They're not going to screw anything up. But when you're consciously doing, when you're playing along, you're thinking about what you're doing.
Yeah.
So the reactions are different.
I think the dead giveaway would be if they just start pumping out all these ICS references.
Depending on what the suggestions are, yeah, absolutely. I'm interested to see, because I gave RJ an idea for the variety show, something that I would have done, that I was going to do, and then it doesn't fit me now. And I'm obviously not going to be there either.
Yeah.
I'm like, hey, if you do the variety show, consider this. It works perfectly. I'm not going to ruin it for you.
But, no, don't. Yeah.
But it will work the way that I have it had designed it. It will, RJ will kill this. Mm-hmm. It would be great if he does it.
We'll push him. We'll tell him to definitely do what the judgmentalist told you to do, RJ. But we'll push him. We'll push him. All right. So
you're going to get one of two responses. If you approach him with that, either A, he's going to look at you like you got three heads because he's already forgotten the idea, he's just going to chuckle and be like, oh yeah, it's coming.
I mean, yeah, knowing RJ, it could easily be the first.
Oh, easily. Yeah.
Okay. So are you going to hypnotize Brogan right now for us?
I've never hypnotized anybody over Zoom. I am doing Monday night. I am part of some sort of thing where somebody's going to get hypnotized over Zoom, but I don't think I'm going to be doing the hypnosis.
Yeah.
I'm kind of being interviewed on something.
Yeah.
And then, and I really need to find the time before tomorrow night. Oh, geez.
Mm.
To watch one of the old episodes. So I kind of know what the format is.
That's always fun.
Check out
Between Two Minds, The Court of the Mind, all of it, judgmentalist.com.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Just one.com. I said it three times because I was, that's what you do to make people remember. But I said the wrong part three times.
And my real call to action for anybody is if you are part of or good friends with like a nonprofit or a school group or somebody, yes. like we love doing fundraiser shows. Like if every show that I ever did for the rest of my career had money going to a great cause, sign me up. I'm in. Yep. So if you have a group like that, or if you're part of a group like that, feel free to reach out through either of those websites. I think that, you know, what we do is much better than setting up a GoFundMe or selling shitty pizza kits or, you know, doing those things where a restaurant gives 10 or 15% of the check to your cause. Like you're giving people a show. And, you know, we've got the way that we've got it set up that we do a fee split, we cap the fee. And if it's relatively local to us, that capped fee is pretty low.
Yeah.
Cause we build our travel cost into the cap.
Yeah.
So we bear all the risk because we've done shows that were small and we've lost money on them because of travel costs, but it's what we signed up for. The nonprofit's never going to lose money doing one of the shows. We've put together a little guide to help people who don't sell tickets all day, every day on how to sell more tickets. And we try to make it as easy as possible, to make it work and make it a success.
Well, there you go. Yeah. If you've got a worthy cause, and I mean, I'm sure most of the causes are worthy, have show will travel, check them out, judgmentalist.com, reach out to Joebeth. As you've heard, Joebeth is a good, friendly guy. You shouldn't be scared of reaching out to Joebeth at all. Have a chat with him. I don't know if we've got anything else to talk about. Look, you're the guest. You get to speak about anything you want. We've sort of prompted you a little bit. Have you got any wild topics that you want to discuss?
Well, we already covered the Paul McCartney thing, so no.
Okay, cool. So you can also find Joebeth in other places, such as the Big Sexy Digital Nomad podcast with co-host Big Sexy. And again, I have to say thank you very much I'm going to say not rigging that contest whatsoever for my name spinning up.
It was on the live stream.
It's on a live stream. I've seen it.
The wheel spun the wheel, so we had no control over any of that.
Yeah, I did. That was in my email to Digital Nomad, was saying if I win, it's going to look rigged. At least from my perspective.
I didn't even see that email, but
oh, good.
No,
good.
I don't. As far as
Big
I
Sexy
know,
did, yeah.
There's no way to really rig those things.
No. So, it's a legit website app thing. So because,
right. I mean, I guess somebody could produce one that looks like.
Yeah.
But if you knew
you're not
me
in
and Big
Sexy, Jack, you're not getting that rigged.
I was going to say, if you knew Big Sexy and I, you'd knew that we don't have the skills to do that. Yeah. Or the time.
We're lucky that we're all able to hit record right now. That's the skill level. Yeah.
Exactly.
On the socials, at Judgmentalist, is that where you would
at
like
psychic,
people to...
Psychic-ish.
Psychic-ish, that's right. Yes. Yep. Psychic-ish.
And that's on, let's see, what do they call it now? X?
Twitter.
Because
it's okay to dead name Twitter.
Yeah.
But if you go to twitter.com, it doesn't take you there anymore.
It does.
It has I went today to get the information for this and a big screen that came up saying work for remotely or something.
No, it works for me. Maybe it's just in your neck of the woods. Maybe you've pissed off Elon Musk.
It wouldn't surprise me.
Yeah. There is a experience with a hypnotist one time, so you're banned.
Yeah, exactly. Their Instagram, YouTube, if you're in any way curious about the hypnosis stuff, there's a ton and a growing swatch of content from the shows that end up on there. Between Two Minds has a Patreon that we encourage people that are interested in the show to sign up at the free tier. There are basically two relevant tiers. There are three, because when we first set it up, Patreon makes you do a paid tier.
Yeah.
The $5 tier, which is the base tier, has absolutely no added value. in, In fact, admittedly, it has no
added
value.
It's kind of like our show.
And no comment. I get stuff in the mail. I'm at the mail tier. So
sure.
People have signed up for it, the $5 tier. And I have made numerous posts that only go to the $5 tier that say, hey, you guys weren't supposed to sign up for this, but you have. We appreciate you. Tell me what you'd like me to add so that I can add some value. We also have the ability, you can go and buy the hypnosis portion of any of our shows through the shop on the Patreon.
Oh, wow.
And they're about $20 a pop. If they are out there, and I get weird people from all, and I don't know that the people are weird, but I get people from all over the world buying those.
Weird locations. Okay. Yeah.
Weird locations. Like I've had people buy them from New Zealand. I'm like, I don't know anybody in New Zealand.
Oh, no. And everyone in New Zealand is weird.
I figured you'd say that. But those are there. If any of those shows were done as part of a fundraiser for a group.
Yeah.
When I kick back a portion of any of the online sales to that group into perpetuity.
That's great.
But then there's also a $25 tier that if you're at the $25 a month tier, I feed all of those shows into that. So at $25 a month, you get all of the shows, which
that's really good.
We do shows every month. So, but the value really gets realized at that tier when I hit a big chunk. Like I've got 5 shows that are going to happen over a week in Oregon at the, a county fair.
Yep.
The 5 shows that are in Rochester, like every show. So if I end up doing 7-8 shows in a month, you're going to get 7 or 8 shows for $25.
There's your value.
And that stuff that, you know, and all that money just goes to help offset our travel costs and things like that. Like that's not, you know,
we're not
living off of Patreon money.
we understand where Patreon money goes. Postage. Postage is where it goes for me.
Exactly.
Okay. Anything else you want to plug before I tell Brogan to plug their stuff?
To steal a line from another podcast, now that I have your attention, I want to talk to you about your Lord and Savior Jesus Christ.
Lord and Savior Matt Donnelly.
Yeah, there you go. No, I'm great. It was fantastic. Jumping on here, you know, texting Brogan on Friday while listening to your new episode. Hey, you guys still record on Sundays of what is morning for me?
Yeah.
I want to talk about this card game. I have ideas.
Oh, we're always happy to have the judgmentalist on discussing ideas. Brogan, have you got anything you want to say?
I always want to say thank you to Jobeth because he gives me a job.
Yes, yeah.
I do all the art for Jobeth's shows, so if that's any selling point to anybody, book a show with Jobeth and I will draw you a thing.
Did you say Showbeth Jobeth?
What?
Did you say Showbeth Jobeth?
Book a show with.
Oh, okay. I'm like, Jesus, what are you Christ talking about, Showbeth Jobeth? This is very weird. I'm cutting that out because I don't know what I heard.
If you're a big time magic performer and you're wondering the easiest way to not pay to get Brogan to do an illustration for you, book an Elkton Magic gig.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And this also means that I have your reference and then put you on shit like a trading card game.
Ooh, if you want to be in the Obelisk trading card game, reach out to Jobeth, judgmentalist.com, book a show. There you go. Done. Sorted. That's how you can get all the art, Brogan.
Yes. Yep. Also, if you want art, I have a store that if you want stuff brought to Scoopfest, there is a code, enter Scoops at checkout, and I will bring shit to you.
Yep. Speaking of art and bringing shit to you, Jobeth can testify to this. The Piff comic book.
Yes.
I am now opening it up to more than just patrons. Anyone who wants one. I mean, these are very limited. I don't know. I've probably only got like 8 left. If you want one, reach out to me either on social media or through Nice Pod Bud or you can find me. It's
$50 US, then whatever postage costs, you get the PIF comic, you get an art print, you get some random stickers. And I think I said I would even put you in a PIF comic either by name or likeness. And it's assigned with a special message book in there. You know, yeah, ask me for details.
And let me put this into context. The first PIF comic that I purchased cost me almost $400.
Yes. Yeah.
So $50 is nothing.
Yeah, exactly.
What?
Because I had to buy the deluxe edition to get it.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
It was the same for you, Brogan.
The PIF comic that I purchased happened to come with PIF's book and a tacular and a coin and a deck of cards.
I made a good deal with the comic. Yeah. Made a good deal with Vanishing Ink, and they threw in all this extra stuff with the comic.
In my head, I mean, like the actual strip, and I'm like, you paid Wayne $400 on Patreon.
Oh my god! If someone wanted to do that, definitely reach out.
Eventually, yeah. Oh, I signed up for your Patreon.
I know, I'm so far behind.
A year and a half ago.
Yeah.
And oh, I don't know. I don't pay any attention to that. I wanted one thing, so I signed up for the Patreon, and I think I'm what, at like a $10 a month tier. So like in 2 years, I'll have paid $400.
Yeah.
But that's not what I was talking about.
I've already said this to a couple of people already who have been longtime supporters of Not So Good At This. If you ever have an idea for a comic, you just shoot it my way and I will turn it into a comic. Because you've been supporting for ages now. So yeah, but you're right.
I just haven't come up with the, oh shit, I need this idea since that first one, which was fantastic, by the way.
But it still makes me feel bad for not doing things.
No, because if there were any reason for me to feel slighted by it, I'd just log into Patreon and kill the subscription, which I haven't done.
I mean, I've said it to other supporters, and they've echoed that sentiment as well. So I appreciate that, which is, I mean, yeah, it's the same. Like, Patreons that I've supported, it's for supporting people and supporting friends and things like that, which I think is, that's important.
I think there's an inherent need for anybody who has the Patreon to understand that those people who support you, even if they're like longtime people that support you, they may disappear for a period of time because things happen in people's lives. So, it's all elements of it are understood, I think. So,
Right, we're done. Find us on social media at NicePodBud. Send us your emails, admin@NicePodBud or NicePodBud.com. And you know, the usual stuff. Anyway, thanks. Thank you, Joybeth. And thank you for stopping by and having a listen.
As always, stay fresh, you bags.